Welcome to Work Mom Says,
Don't Be an Idiot.
And now, here's your host, Work Mom.
Hello, everybody. I'm Lori Jo Vest. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Work Mom Says, Don't Be an Idiot, where we talk about how to play the emotional contact sport of business so you can experience less drama and more success. And today we are talking about men, trauma, and how it shapes everything. I have an amazing guest today, Dr. Kevin Scott, that I found on LinkedIn. You probably already guessed, I find a lot of great people on LinkedIn. And Dr. Scott had some videos about men and trauma. And I know we talk a lot about men needing to open up, but what if the difficulties that men experience with emotional, expression aren't about willingness? So today we're going to go deeper into how trauma shapes the way that men move through the world. And oftentimes anyone doesn't realize what's causing them to behave the way they do. And trauma can be a big part of it. So meet Dr. Kevin Scott. Hi, Dr. Scott. How are you?
Oh, Lori Jo, how are you doing? First of all, thank you so much for allowing me to share this space with you and your audience. I'm looking forward to having a very dynamic and robust conversation about a wonderful topic. Very interesting topic as well.
It is.
Very much needed. Yes, very much needed.
So how did trauma become, it's your specialty, right? How did that happen?
Yeah, well, I assure you that for most individuals, trauma, we don't go out saying, hey, I want to specialize in trauma. Right. For me specifically, it was just a culmination, if you would, of my life experiences and some very poor choices that I made on my journey that I was confronted face on with trauma. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in one of many dark, tumultuous journeys that I had undertook. And someone had given me a book by Viktor Frankl. It was called Man's Search for Meaning. And I read that book, and very interesting. It was really probably a very seminal moment for me. But there were some things in that book that he said that stuck out to me. And one of the things that he said, being an existentialist theorist, and he invented logotherapy, was that pain is no longer suffering. Or your suffering is no longer suffering once your pain has meaning. Mm. And yes, and when I tell you that was my aha coming to Jesus epiphany, Oprah moment. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of us, when we can when we can really articulate, especially when we're talking about in the sphere of trauma, mm-hmm. when we are able to give our body the somatic and physiological pain a voice and articulate what we are feeling, mm-hmm. that is such a major breakthrough. And for me, once I understood this, not just for myself, but for how many other people struggled in this same space. I tried to run from it. Lori Jo, trust me, I did, but divine intervention kept bringing me back to this. This is your calling. You can't run from this.
Yep.
So you better go ahead and accept.
I love it. Well, I'm big on trauma because I'm big on trauma. No, it's a funny thing to say, but I have experienced a ton of trauma in my life. I come from extreme poverty, all different kinds of abuse, alcoholism, all kinds of things. And once you understand it, know thyself, I think is one of the best pieces of advice you can give anybody.
Absolutely.
So was there a moment that you went, oh wow, this is something I got to dig into and make it a part of my practice?
Well, that's very interesting, because you know how you can know that you have a special calling, an anointing, a gift, if you would, that you're just, that you excel in a certain capacity. And that's fine. And for me, I understood that I felt a very different ability to connect with, I mean, just a myriad of individuals cross culturally.
Yeah.
Gender, but I mean, age wise. I mean,
I love it.
You know, I never really met a stranger, if you will.
Nice.
But in addition to that, Lori Jo, when I had other individuals that kept telling me, hey, you don't understand the power that you have. You don't understand the impact that you have on people. And I'm like, yeah. I would hear this all the time, but I never really understood it to the level that they were saying it on. And I'll be full transparency, until very recently, what is really starting to sink in, that, hey, Kevin, you know, you may have a very, very, very vast audience of individuals who need to hear not just what you have to say, just because you like, not just to hear yourself talk, but to understand what you're saying is rooted in empirical evidence. This is evidence-based.
Right. And you have a whole audience that may hear you differently than they can hear anybody else.
Absolutely. Right?
You know, and that doesn't necessarily mean they have to be men or black men or men of a certain age. It's like there are certain people that will hear your voice and it'll resonate. And you don't know who those people are. So to me, you want to reach as many people as you can, right?
It is so funny that you say that, because without fail, whenever I do a training session or a guest speaking event, sit on a panel, without fail, the overwhelming majority of individuals who approach me after the fact are white women.
I love it. And who knows why, right? I mean, what do you think? Is there a reason?
I believe it right there, Larry. Lori Jo. Okay, I believe it right there. Okay,
I love it.
But it's a fact, it is a fact. It really is. And some of the questions that they have, just real quick, I remember. I do a lot of crisis intervention training for law enforcement.
Nice.
And afterwards, young lady came up to me, gorgeous. I mean, literally gorgeous. And just asked me a question. And it had to do with trauma, and it had to do with addiction and overdose. How sometimes, unfortunately, tragically, we lose a loved one. And she asked me, was there anything else that she could have done? And I told her, absolutely not. I said, it's so difficult, because ultimately it rests with us, the individual who is addicted.
Yeah.
And having dealt with that, that demon, that stronghold, I know what my family went through. And she looked at me, and I'll never forget, she was just so almost relieved that I told her that, unfortunately, no, because I've had, you know, my sister, my mother, and other family members were just, you know, there was nothing there. You feel so hopeless. Yeah. So to your point, yeah, it's amazing how many people just, you have no idea. We have no idea. Not just me, you as well.
Right.
Who we impact. Yeah, who we impact.
And I think, you know, you get to a certain point where you realize that you've turned your trauma into something that can really help others. And when you can do that, I mean, that feels good. I mean, that's part of what I do, obviously. You know, it's so, let's dig into trauma. Let's do a little quick trauma 101. What is it? Because I mean, it's funny, the conversation around trauma, we're talking about it more than ever. And I also feel like we misunderstand it more than ever as well. So what is trauma in your definition?
Well, there's a lot of, you can go online. I know SAMHSA has a definition, quite a few people, you know, places and organizations have definitions. Trauma to me, and how I would define it personally, if you want to use a clinical connotation, if you would. Trauma excuse me, is any disruption, short or long term, in an individual experiences, whether it be a series of events, an event that disrupts their physical, social, emotional, and spiritual space in any manner. And understand this, that you don't, and this is where a lot of individuals minimize, if you would, what trauma is all about. You do not have to be the direct primary experience of trauma. Secondary and vicarious trauma is just as real as direct trauma. In fact, a lot of individuals are dealing with secondary and vicarious trauma and conflate it, or if you would, or even confuse it with anxiety and depression, which may also be symptomatic and present.
Right.
But it can also be trauma. Another in my work, in my research and the work that I do, I think there's another term that I have been requested to do a lot of trainings on, is moral injury. There's such a strong association, which I'm becoming aware of, between moral injury and trauma for a lot of different reasons. I won't get into it now because it's so diverse, but there's a tangential relationship between the two.
Okay. Now, I have to ask you a little bit about moral injury, though. What does it mean?
Moral injury. Moral injury is a term that has its nascence or renaissance from the military.
Okay.
And moral injury is the result of having to engage in a behavior that is the antithesis, diametrically opposed of your beliefs and value system, of your moral compass. I guess a perfect example of that, if you were to talk to, and the reason why I truly believe subjectively as a Marine Corps combat era veteran of the Persian Gulf War, why our Vietnam veterans are so recalcitrant and have so much trepidation about talking about their experience is because they were engaged in behaviors that went totally against their moral compass.
I see that. I have an uncle that we actually lost for decades. Nobody knew where he was. And before my grandmother died, I made it my goal to find him for her. And my father was able to find him, but his reasoning, my father explained it that he had been a sniper in Vietnam. And it destroyed him.
Absolutely.
Destroyed him. So talk about moral injury and trauma. Ooh.
Yeah. And trauma. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So now you see the parallel there. And then, so what I found out, that is just not applicable to the military, that we have moral injury as parents, in marriages, substance use disorder. I mean, moral injury is applicable in literally every facet of our lives. And once you start peeling the layers of that onion back, I recently just did a session at the Michigan My Peers Conference last month, a fantastic conference. Anybody who's a peer specialist in Michigan needs to attend that. Shameless plug. But it was just, I'm just amazed at just how many people, just through word of mouth, show up at these sessions, especially my sessions, and specifically, and are just fascinated by the information that is being brought to them, because it's a. I believe each and every one of us, Lori Jo, we have a duty to make one person's life better before we leave here. I truly believe. I believe that in my very being, that we have a duty to our fellow man. I don't care what they look like. To help a person's life, make someone's life better, having met you.
Yep.
So, I'm going to get off my soapbox.
I'm standing up there with you. Don't worry. Got to make sure there's room for me. But no, I am so with you. And the other aspect of this that I have to bring up is that when you are hurting, yes, you got to deal with your own stuff. And sometimes you're just hurting, right? Because you're dealing with your stuff and you still got a lot of pain. One of the best ways I've found to dispel pain is to help someone else.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, volunteer somewhere, do something to help someone else, right?
Absolutely.
Just a little side trip there, but let's talk about the difference between big T trauma and small T trauma.
Yeah.
This is a good one because I think we were talking on our prep call that I always say, a 2-year-old's first trauma is when their sibling is born and their whole life changes.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, some of those 2-year-olds carry them to their 22, 32, and 42. We won't even get into that. Yes. So big T and little T, for those of you all who are not familiar, we talk about the big T of trauma and the little T of trauma. The big T of trauma normally is associated with your major disruptions, you know, your natural disasters, physical abuse, verbal abuse, growing up in very abject circumstances, sex trafficking, things of that nature. Those are your big military, which we just discussed, and opposed to what we say little T and trauma, which is, you know, not as on the hierarchy, if you would.
Right.
But still, we're talking about bullying, self-identification, you know, not being in a, you know, peer pressure or lack thereof, you know, not feeling, you know, validated, you know, growing up, doing those teenage years, those very, very malleable and impressionable years. So that we can be traumatic. And, you know, for a 16-year-old about to go to prom, my oldest granddaughter just went to her prom. So, and she, one day we were going somewhere and she had a band. I was like, what's that for? I said, what you doing with acne? She said, I don't have acne. I have a pimple. Big difference because yes. Okay. You know, but
small T trauma,
but absolutely small T trauma. But my point is that at 16, acne or of having a pimple is traumatic. I push back. Because I've learned that who am I to tell you what is traumatic for you?
Yeah.
And how do you respond to that trauma? I can't tell you that.
No.
I shouldn't say that. I've had to catch myself a lot of times saying, that's so dumb. How could you feel? But I have to really learn how to shut my mouth and say, hey, we don't know. Because, Lori Jo, we don't know what's causing that person to react that way.
Yes. We don't have any idea.
We don't have any idea. Yeah.
So one of the most interesting aspects of trauma, I think, is the our trauma response. And it's funny because I didn't learn until I was in my late 50s. And I think it was because they figured out, you know, some new trauma styles, I guess you could say, some new trauma responses, that when we are subject to a threat, fight, flight, freeze, fawn. There may be a couple other ones, right?
I'm a fawner,
and I realize my entire life that's what I use to get through difficult times is if everybody likes me, I'll be safe. No, you will not be safe. Some people will take advantage of that. Other people may have a fight trauma response. And when they feel threatened, they automatically go from 0 to 150 in anger. You may, you know, I did when I was younger, turn around and walk away, you know, leave relationships because there would be a conflict and I wasn't strong enough or didn't feel strong enough to deal with it. Right. So what do you find that young men do with, are they aware of their trauma? Are they aware that they have a trauma response? What do you see?
That is a very, how could I say, I don't want to say it's a complex question, because I don't want to in any way minimize the ability of anyone to understand their own responses to trauma. I would say very cautiously that I don't think any of us truly understand why we respond the way that we respond. In fact, Lord Joe, your question is so provocative and so profound. It really is. And I don't minimize it at all, because what the question that you asked about trauma response, if we understand, I had the opportunity to not only study under world-renowned Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, but I actually had the opportunity to meet him. For those who don't know, he wrote the book, The Body Keeps the Score. Yes, it is. Arguably one of the most profound trauma expert in the world. And one of the things he says is that trauma doesn't come back as a memory. It comes back as a behavior. So once we understand that, once Kevin understood that, to my point earlier, that we have no idea what's making this individual go from 0 to 60. You mentioned having to react with anger. Well, what if from a very early age, an individual was always in the survival mode?
Yep.
So that's where they're working from, survival.
Yep.
What if a person was violated from an early age?
Yep.
So they're working from that anger, threat mode. That's why they're so difficult, maybe so difficult in relationships, so standoffish, because they don't trust individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's so important when we look with a trauma-informed approach. I'm convinced, Lord Joe, I'm convinced that we all have a trauma response mechanism that very few of us, first of all, acknowledge that it exists, and then come to the full realization of what is causing it in the first place. Mm-hmm. Why am I so angry? I'm gonna give you another perfect example, since we're talking about men. Why is it that some men have a hard time with authority from women?
Ooh, good question. What do you think?
That would be 4 other episodes.
You come back. We'll keep doing this. You can be a regular.
When you discuss this, when you look at what the term that we call, there's another gentleman who looks like me, but I will admit, even though I think I have a fantastic beard, I have real bad beard envy, and his beard, he wears his better than mine, because his is snow white, and I wish mine would just turn snow white.
Oh, that's but so funny.
He talks about mother woundedness in men.
Yeah.
So when we have those attachment issues, and listen to what I'm saying, Lord, because I don't sugarcoat. I'm very transparent. Yeah. We have some men out here with some very effed up images and feelings. I'm talking about well beyond misogynist.
Yep.
I'm talking about have some very loathing, hating, resentment, and bitterness when it comes to women that stems directly from their childhood and the lack of attachment bonding.
Hmm. Wow.
So I know that was a lot there. I didn't mean to give you all.
No,
that,
it gives me pause, because it should. I mean, it explains. I mean, if you look at it, we're all seeing it. We're seeing it in these young men coming out and saying women shouldn't vote, women shouldn't this, women shouldn't that, they should shut up. You know, there's a lot of that very pointed anger out there online that we're seeing. What do you think causes that?
Why would you ask that question? Seriously.
I'm sorry.
Why would you ask that question? I'll just say this. We're living in a time right now that it's okay to say these things. It's okay to really just peel, just take off any type of, how could I say, protocol, if you would.
Yes.
Compassion, maybe another one.
Appropriateness.
Appropriateness as another. I mean, just pure decency.
Yeah.
And respect. So I think that we're unfortunately living in a time to where all bets are off. That, you know, yeah, we've been given a open door to say almost anything.
Yeah.
Publicly.
Yep. And it's not good. It's not doing anything good for our society, our culture, our people.
No, it's not.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. How those of us who love young men, mm-hmm, and who want to see something done that would help them, is there anything we can do for those guys?
Sure it is. And it's, you know, it's, there are a lot of nuances,
yeah,
if you would, that come into play with this. When you have to look at the environment in its totality of circumstances, okay? Just because a person is void of a positive male role model does not mean that they still don't have the responsibility to grow into a responsible, mm-hmm, man.
True.
So how do you find the surrogates, if you would? Because there's a lot of damn good, strong single moms out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm about to get into the weeds, but
do it.
I'm about to. I really believe that starting with my generation, I'm a boomer, the last of the boomers, we started this very downward, deleterious trending of parenting, mm, to where not only did we want to give our children more than we had, but we didn't want them to experience the inconveniences that we had. So I don't want to say that we've made our children soft, but I do not believe that they have the resiliency, mm-hmm, overall that we had. I'll say that, number one. Number two, I truly do believe also that we have not taught our young men from all different cultures to voice their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to express disappointment, shame, hurt, frustration, fear, loneliness. We have not been taught to express that.
Right.
Society has only taught us, and especially as the man, that you can, you have to be tough and this strong, you know, macho individual. Some people would argue we don't live in a toxic masculine society, but we do live in a toxic masculine society.
Yeah.
And you can debate that all you want to. So when we have that, I think what it creates, Lori Jo, is what about the man who is not as masculine as society wants him to be or has deemed him to be? So what do you do with that very sensitive male? And so now go back to childhood. When you talk about what could be done, how does he even find himself as a sensitive child who doesn't like sports? He may not like to fish or hunt. He may like to, who knows, color or, you know, design or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so It is a lot that we have to understand, that our culture has evolved into truly a potpourri of an eclectic group of individuals, whether you like them or not.
Right. Yeah. Lots of variety in different types of people and life experiences and how they handle each individual thing. And we just talked on my last episode about how we've raised an entire generation of kids that don't, that actually are, have a fear of discomfort. And who, yeah, go into video games and play, and they can be a rock star in the video game.
If you really want to see just the uncomfortability of our youth, and again, of any, I don't care. Take your pick, black, white, Latina, Asian. Let their cell phone go dead. Let them lose their cell phone. Let them not be able to get on Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
It is something to see. I mean, it is something to see.
Yes, it is. Yes, I can imagine. And I'm the same way, but I'm older and I remember not having those phones.
I remember when we had to remember the phone numbers. And now I had to check myself. I'm like, man, it is so crazy that, and I'm not on my phone like that. And my wife gets mad at me when she calls me. She's like, well, I don't know where it's at. It was, you know, because I'm not attached to it like that, but There are some individuals that are. We've seen some of these. The term they use now is called crash out. They're crashing out to see these individuals, these young children, on these videos when their mom or primary caregiver takes their video games away. They literally go, and I'm looking. I'm like, is this real?
It's an addiction.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that we as human beings are meant to have the constant level of stimulation that we become addicted to.
No. It is, again, my oldest granddaughter's, when I laugh at her because she says, I'm overstimulated. I'm like, what does that even mean? Explain that to me.
How old is she?
She's 8. You know, that's a lot of context there. What do you mean? Explain that to me. Yes, you know, so I, when I listen to them, our youth, our young adults, our next generation, when they talk, you have to listen to them. And I think to your point that we can't look at young adults through our old eyes. We have got to get on their level and understand what they're dealing with. I'm so grateful. I don't know what or how I would have navigated this digital age. Yeah. Social media has made, because now trauma is incessant.
Yeah.
You can literally be traumatized from the time you open your eyes in the morning to the time you close them at night because of social media in the digital age.
Yeah.
And society has not caught up with that. I don't think society understands the depth and the breadth and the magnitude of that we live in a very normalized traumatic society.
Yeah. And if you couple that with the toxic, you know, political environment that's happening right now.
Absolutely.
And I think we're a nation in trauma.
Absolutely. I mean, we really have to go back to, I think when this thing really took a pivot, when the whole mental health thing and trauma came, we have to go back to COVID.
Yeah.
And COVID changed everything. And that's when we found out that people really, a lot of us could not deal with the isolation and living by ourselves. That, to your point, we are social beings. We are meant to be together. We're meant to be with each other and to communicate. Mm-hmm. And this digital age that we live in, I have three adult children. They're all millennials. And my oldest son, he's at the high end of the millennial. And my youngest son is at the low end. And he gets mad. But my youngest son was like, I said, how come you don't call me? He's like, Dad, we spoke yesterday. I said, no. He said, yeah, I text you. I said, that's not talking. But they swear that that is communicating. Well, I mean, it's communicating, but it's definitely not talking.
Yeah, it's not the same. Not the same. Mm-mm. No,
absolutely not. No. And which is why I hate to say it again, going back to COVID, which really blows my mind up. Because we talk about trauma, and I want to make sure for your audience, yes. Lord, that we understand. I want to put trauma at its most rudimentary level, so that people have no misconception. So let me use this scenario, if you would.
Perfect. For
enough. One of the things that I think was disrupted the most during COVID was customer service.
Oh, and yeah.
It was deplorable. And even now, there are so many instances online of people going into a Starbucks or wherever and getting into these altercations over custom. We're talking about over extra sour cream.
Yeah. Yeah. It's insanity.
It is beyond insanity. It is literally you have to ask yourself, at least I do, how did we as human beings get to this point? To where I want to hurt you because you forgot to give me a large fry.
Yeah, it's tough. How did we get there? When you think about it, I think over time, some of us have gotten better about talking about EQ, managing EQ, teaching EQ. Mm-hmm. And some of us have not paid a bit of attention to it and don't even know it exists and just behave out of our emotional roller coaster. We just behave out of our roller coaster, right? We don't have the skills, which is what I try to do with this podcast, is help people understand. And I talked about this the other day. I'm not sure if it was on our call, but about how if you have trauma in your life, you've had a difficult, some difficult experience, you had a death in the family, all kinds of things. You had a sister born when you were 2 and a half, who knows what, right? Mm-hmm. And you find yourself behaving in ways that do not suit you. You know you feel guilty for what you did or said, or you feel, it took you in a direction you didn't want to go in, or you said something to your boss that, God, that was so dumb, I wish I had known better. If you go to a therapist and spend some time unpacking that stuff and getting to know yourself, you will be able to, if you choose to, develop coping skills and ways to manage your thoughts and your emotions that help you behave more in a way that suits you, that suits your spirituality, your moral compass, all those things. And I shared this in a call this morning because I think it's just so funny. I've been in therapy forever. I'm not like I'm addicted or anything. And it's usually chunks. Here I went for a couple years here, went for 5 years there, as you unpack layer upon layer, right? My latest therapist gave me this piece of paper that has, I think it's about 30 things on it, and it's cognitive distortions.
Yes.
So that when I'm getting myself in trouble, I can go, I'm a good person. Bad things shouldn't happen to me. Oh, absolutely. That's magical thinking, Lori. Stop.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Psychoeducation.
Yes.
To me is such a huge part of what helps you heal and develop a healthier emotional stamina, so that you can take a hit when you, because life is going to be that. Life is life. It's going to come up and punch us in the face sometimes, right?
Sure. Absolutely. And you just mentioned several very poignant things. You talked about emotional intelligence. Very, very, very few of us even understand that concept. And when you do understand what makes you tick, when you know that you're a happy go lucky person, that you wake up, you just bring that energy with you. And I do believe that our young people do know that. I do believe our young people know that they're funny. They're the life of the party. They understand that. So I think to your point that when, and this is for any of us, when we start allowing that negative energy, whether it be through association, to come into our lives, or whether it be by choice in the decisions that we make in life. And by the way, the things that you had just described about the whole boss, what I should have said that to my boss and this type of, those are all part of moral injury. What do we know? What things that we either didn't do or did do, or felt we should have done and didn't do. I mean, it's just right. A combination of things that we have to go that we have to deal with, and it's uncomfortable. But here's the thing that I think that really, because at a young age we don't understand this. So to the younger audience, we want, because we live in such a quote unquote magical society, we want to live in this very perfect world, almost, if you will. We don't, where we're very frustrated when our equilibrium and our daily routines are disturbed. We have to learn how to master. And if we could do this at a young age, because I didn't grasp this concept until much later in life. Mastering moving on without closure. And what do I mean? What do I mean by that? I mean that sometimes to understand that this is not going to end the way I want it to, and I have to be okay with that. That I can't fix everything. There's a term I used to say, Kevin, you can't play the Pope. It's not, you just can't play the Pope. I can't fix everything. So why am I trying?
Yeah.
We do not have that epiphany until much later in life, when we've wasted so much time and energy, because I would tell all the young people out there, you do not get this time back.
No, you do not. You will not regret the time you spent.
You will do not get this time. You do not get this time back. There's an old saying that youth is wasted on the young. And I've heard that when I was like 15, and I have never forgotten it.
Same.
You don't get this time back. You don't get this time back.
Yep. And I just said that. It's funny. I just said that yesterday because I was traumatized in my childhood. And I also didn't have a whole lot of what I'll call fetching up. I didn't have a lot of parenting. So I did a lot of self-parenting. And I didn't get really good at that till I quit drinking. Then I got good at it. Because if you are killing your pain, you're not feeling it. Absolutely. And you're not going to heal. Right? I mean, you have to feel it to heal it.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. We could go on. We could do this for a long time. So
absolutely.
A couple of things. Now, when a young man has been told, because we know men get told this their whole life, that vulnerability is weakness, don't cry, push through it, just man up. How can they even choose to be more open to be able to heal? I mean, is that a possibility for someone who has got a solid like armor around them? I don't know. What do you think?
I think that life will teach you. Real two quick stories. My oldest son got stung by a bee. I don't know how old he was. But I was like, oh, it's not, it couldn't hurt that bad. He was crying. It couldn't hurt that bad. And my youngest son got his fingers caught in the garage door and he was crying. I was like, oh, I don't know. It hurt a little bit. I know it hurt, but it couldn't hurt that bad. And then out the blue one day, I'm high to admit this, but out the blue up one day, I didn't change my thinking until I got my fingers caught in the garage
door.
And then I turned into that 8-year-old child. And I was like, oh, my. So I had to go back to my sons and apologize to them for my insensitivity at that time. So the point I'm trying to make is this, is that as men, we have to have conversations with our sons and nephews and cousins and brothers, frat brothers, colleagues, and tell them, hey, it's okay. It's okay. How can you tell someone who's going through a difficult relationship, life-changing, a divorce? Hey, so, you know, suck it. I mean, no, that hurts.
Yeah.
That hurts.
Yep.
Period. and to let allow them to be okay with that. That that's just one scenario, but there are a lot of instances that we as men, I know myself personally, had fear. You're talking about raising a family. You have a family, and then all of a sudden you lose your job or whatever, or you know you lose a stream of income or whatever. You have a turn, somehow you're dealing with a life changing illness, whatever it is. You know, we are, men are vulnerable.
Yeah.
Men have feelings and emotions. Any man that says they don't, they're lying. Any man that tells you that they haven't cried, stay away
from
them.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm serious. If you haven't navigated, if life hasn't brought you to your knees where you have shed tears, and I'm talking about those visceral gut level crying, ugly face, snot crying.
Yeah.
Stay away from those people because they have developed a hardness to where emotions, they're impervious to that. And plus, I'm a firm believer that a good cry is very therapeutic.
Oh, it is. It so is. I mean, I think it even helps you get rid of some toxic chemicals,
absolutely,
too, through your
absolutely
tears, right?
Absolutely.
Right? I've heard that.
Just like sweat.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I... another one of those things I'd love to talk about is in my past experience, when I've gone through really difficult things with family or things where there can be really confusing, someone told me once that if you can look at your trauma as something that happened to you instead of as who you are,
exactly,
that simple reframing can help you handle it in a different way, right?
Absolutely. One of the most, language is important when we talk about trauma. It is so, so very important how we, as you put it, reframe and posture language. A lot of times people come to therapy, or to a space where they're seeking help, and people say, "What's wrong with you?" You know, instead of "What happened to you?" And understand that you're the victim. You are not responsible for our trauma.
Yeah,
it is so big. I tell people this also, even in the realm of addiction, that people say, "Oh, they made a choice." You know, it's self. No one woke up and said, "I want to be an addict." And in that same, same lifestyle, no one deserves to be molested, raped, robbed, beat. So those things, when we talk about that, even in very high risk behavior situations, we still have to understand that you can be a victim, and it's about what happened to you still.
Right. Yeah, it's huge. That's a huge, and it's a really great place to start, kind of, if you're hesitant to go to therapy, if you feel like it's just too much. What advice would you give to a young man who's thinking, "I'm suffering and I am just, don't want to do that. I don't want to go sit in a room with somebody and tell them a bunch of crap. How are they going to help me?" Because I've heard that myself from men. They're like, I'm not going to sit there and tell somebody over and over again what happened to me. It's not worth it. It won't work. What would you say to someone that knew they had some things going on and was struggling with what to do next?
I would respond to that, Lori Jo, in a couple of ways. There is a saying in NA, Narcotics Anonymous, that the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. And I would tell people this, that you can substitute the word addict and put anything in there. The therapeutic value of one domestic violence survivor helping another is without parallel. The therapeutic value of one cancer survivor helping another one is without parallel. Whatever you want to put in there, and it works. So I would say there is strength in numbers. First of all, you are never going through your trauma alone. Understand, it feels like it, but you are not. There is a phalanx of individuals who will stand and support you. That's the first thing. that I would tell them. The second thing I would tell them is that when it comes to trauma, especially for those of us who have a lot of it, I would, mm-hmm. and they were contemplating going to therapy, I would have them look at it like this. Instead of looking at cleaning your whole house or reconstructing or renovating your whole house, I don't know, let's say we're cleaning your whole house. I would say, can you just start with cleaning and straightening out one drawer? Start with just straighten out one drawer. Just start with the closet. And so I would ask that person, what could you do that would make your days better? What could you get rid of? Just what one thing could you get rid of that you would feel better about yourself every day? And just start there. And just don't try to eat that. Don't try to eat the elephant in one bite because it's a process. It is truly a process. Yeah. It took a long time for Kevin to learn how to love Kevin again. It took a long time.
But it was worth it, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing. I didn't always want to go to therapy, sometimes I found groups to be really interesting. Like Absolutely. Adult children of alcoholics. I went to that 12-step mm-hmm. group mm-hmm. for a while.
Okay.
You talked about addicts. I am absolutely an alcoholic completely. Mm-hmm. If I take a drink, I don't know what's going to happen next. It might take a year or two for it to happen, but something's going to happen. Yep. And it's not going to be good. And I have I feel like I have no control over it, right?
Absolutely.
So I just don't do it. And how did I get there? Groups supported by other people. So if you're struggling, share with someone that you're struggling. Find that safe person. You know, find a group. Go to a group therapy if you don't want to sit in a room by yourself. There are groups out there that will support you in so many different kinds of ways. And community resources, you know, call the community resources and see what's out there. Ask your friends, you know, it may seem like you're putting yourself out there, but I think a lot of people are relieved when someone else shares, this is what's going on with me. It's like, oh, good. I don't have to put up a big facade either. Right?
Absolutely. It's so funny you mention that because I tell anybody, if you don't feel that, if you think for some reason that you're the only person who's going with this, go Google.
Yeah.
Go on Google.
Google it.
Google it and watch how many groups pop up.
Yeah.
And if you don't see your group, start it and watch how many people come into
Yes,
it.
Absolutely.
Seriously. I'm so serious.
Yep. I'm with you. Serious. Well, it is getting to be about that time, so we have to wrap up. So Dr. Scott, thank you so much for being here. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you. Where can people find you and any tools or resources that you recommend?
Sure, absolutely. My website is thecrisispeer.com. That is thecrisispeer.com. That's the website, The Crisis Peer. You can reach out to me via that contact information. There are so many individuals I would, for anyone who's dealing with trauma or any resource that you need, call your local CMHs, community health organizations that are out there, like people like Common Grounds. There's so many. You can just Google them in your local areas and start there. But Lori, I think you're doing a fantastic job reaching these young individuals and just your audience as well. So I'm just truly humbled. And thank you. I'm very grateful.
Thank you
for sharing this space with you
so much
this afternoon.
We'll have you back. We will definitely have you back. I promise.
I'm looking forward to it so much.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for joining us, listeners. I am on YouTube, and if you are listening or watching on YouTube, please do me a favor and hit that subscribe button. We also have a website at workmomsays.com if you'd like to get in touch with me. If you'd like to be a guest or you have a suggestion for a guest or you just have a question you want me to answer, reach out to me there. I'm also an open networker on LinkedIn. So thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you again soon with some more helpful information to help you play the emotional contact sport of business and life.
Thanks for listening to Work Mom Says,
Don't Be an Idiot.
For more information, you can email Work Mom at LORI workmomsays.com. That's Lori at workmomsays.com. And remember,
Don't be an idiot.